Good morning, everybody. All right, thanks so much for coming this morning. Last day of TechEd to be here with me to talk about doing Azure development using Visual Studio. My name is Paul Yuknovich. My alias is Paul Yuck, and that's how you can find me. It's an unfortunate one for me. And today, we're going to be talking all about using Visual Studio, either 2010 SP1 or the new Visual Studio 2012 RC, and we're going to make the most of that to build cloud services. So a couple things that my team really think about on the product team, the Visual Studio side, is how do we make and improve your everyday experience for building cloud applications from that end-to-end experience? The other main thing that we're really thinking about is how do these tools integrate with your development lifecycle, from the development phase to the testing phase, to the bug fixing, to the continuous delivery and build, that whole continuous cycle. So along those lines, what I want to do today is I want to give you the quickest overview of the cloud service projects. And then given that this is a 300-level talk, I want to do a much deeper dive into some of the things that we don't normally get to. So I want to go really deep into deployment. I want to talk about everyday diagnostics, you know, all the different kinds of tools that we have to troubleshoot our cloud services, ranging from Windows Azure Diagnostics to the even specialized tools that we have in Visual Studio, such as IntelliTrace. And then what we'll do is we'll take a tour through some of the application development lifecycle tools that we have, for example, the VS Profiler, and how we can make use of that to have a really high-performance cloud service. And then along the way, I'm going to show you tips and tricks that our team has learned throughout the years working with you guys. And if it's okay with you, this thing's going to be really demo-heavy. So does that sound like a good way to spend an hour? All right. Thank you. I like you guys. All right. So super quick overview. This is what I think of as our mall map. You heard early this week that now we have several compute options, right? So from the far left, we have the lightweight websites option, Windows Azure websites, so you can quickly and easily build, you know, those web applications, those medium trust front ends. We also have virtual machines. So whether you think of that as IaaS or whether you think of that as persistent virtual machines, we now have a way for you to spin up your complete operating system with your application payload and run anything custom that you want up in Azure using our data center. And then the far right, we have cloud services. And cloud services is more of what I would think of as a PaaS, or platform as a service, where rather than providing your app and your VM, you're just providing your definition of an end-tier app. Microsoft provides and manages the operating system, and you know all that maintenance of the operating system is something that you don't have to do. Another kind of differentiator that I think about with cloud services, it really lends itself to these highly elastic, highly scalable, highly available, multi-tier scenarios. You know, when I say multi-tier, I'm thinking about it's not just about a front end. It's not just about your web app. It's actually also about all that back-end processing that you want to do. So you could have worker roles. You know, and back in the day, we'd think about Windows services and message queues. It's kind of the same idea, but up in an Azure PaaS, where you have these back-end worker processes that you can fire up and just chew on work. And really, that helps you build that highly available application. So today's focus really is going to be around cloud services with a little bit of virtual machines. And that also happens to be, you know, if you look at what our Visual Studio tools do in the Azure SDK, there's really a lot of optimization around these two areas. You know, and one of the reasons why is just quite simply, cloud services have been around longer, and so we have a little bit more maturity in those tools. And things like virtual machines and websites, you know, they were just announced and they're actually in preview. So just to be super clear, cloud services is in production. Everything I show you with cloud services you can do today, all production, fully supported. And then we have some cool things you can do in preview also. Just to get to know everybody a little bit, who is doing some Azure development today? Okay, that's really great. For those of you who are doing some cloud development, who's using cloud services? Okay, that's great. So most, I think that makes sense. So most of us who have looked at Azure today are doing cloud services because these other options weren't even available until a week ago, right? Okay, so I think you're in the right place. Maybe I'll just touch on kind of the cumulative aspects of what we did in the tool so that everybody gets a kind of a level set on that, and then we will go deep. All right, so really, just thinking about this cloud service anatomy, I think about a few things. If you look at the purple boxes, at the end of the day, we have virtual machines, right? We're standing up actual virtual machines with Windows Server 2008. And if you think about parts or tiers of your application, those are the blue bubbles, right? So if you have a web role, it's basically like having your IIS web application that stood up automatically on a virtual machine that Microsoft manages. Thinking about the worker role, it's almost identical to a web role, except there's no IIS component, right? It's just a completely custom application. It's usually a service running in a run loop, and that can do whatever kind of batch processing, whatever kind of event-driven or message-driven processing that you want, right? And usually you coordinate the two sides together, right? You might have one front end that has a certain amount of load coming on it, then you might have a number of back ends doing different kinds of processing. And the really cool thing about a cloud service is you can control the scale of each tier of your application completely independently, right? So you can say, hey, my front end is getting hammered, I'm going to scale that up, but I might have different load on my back end worker roles. And so it really gives you a lot of flexibility. We also have this thing called VM role. It's in preview. And a VM role is a stateless, it's like a stateless version of an operating system. So meaning you can't write to the file system and expect that data to be there after the next reboot of that machine, which is managed by Microsoft and not by you. And the way I think about VM role is if you have completely custom stuff that you want to install, and you have a lot of stuff, then VM role is an option to have a completely custom OS definition with all that custom software. What most people do is they customize web roles and worker roles by using something called a startup event. And that's kind of like a setup custom action that lets you install, you know, small pieces of software, small dependencies, and you don't need to have a complete custom image to do that. So unless you really have a huge application that you want to install and huge customization, I would stick with web and worker role for the most part. And then just one thing I want to show is you can really scale it out, right? So each, you know, you have a number of instances, and an instance in this case just means the number of VMs, and you can have as many instances as you want of each of the roles, right? Because we have the definition, and we stamp it out. And then a cloud service ultimately sits behind a load balancer, which is also a part of, it's one of the Azure services that we provide. So for your customers and your end users, there's just one URL or just one endpoint that they're thinking about, right? It's http://myservice.cloudapp.com. And as that incoming traffic comes in, the load balancer will manage where the traffic actually goes, you know, doing the round robin style load balancing. And this works with HTTP, HTTPS, and TCP, right? So you can write a really wide breadth of internet style applications. Thinking about the storage options, you know, just actually looking at this picture, one of the keys to a cloud service to be highly available and highly scalable is that you've built with scalability in mind and that you've also written an app that is stateless, right? So we don't want to write to the file system and kind of not plan on, hey, my traffic could be routed to different instances or different VMs, and that data might not be there. So what we want to do is we want to use one of the Azure storage options, which is another service that Azure manages, and then we can be really sure that that data also scales and that that data is around consistently in all the time. And so just to summarize, you know, there's actually a number of storage options. I'll talk about the key ones that I'm going to show today. So there's blob storage, which you can basically think about, that's where you put your files. You have table storage, which is kind of NoSQL-like. It's a really big collection, a really big dictionary, where you can quickly put data in and quickly query it out. And then we have SQL Azure databases, which is much more like a relational databases. So moving forward from that, the way that we ship our tools is really as a part of this Windows Azure SDK for .NET. And as you've seen earlier in the week, there's actually a number of SDKs now, right? So .NET is actually one of the languages, and there's a whole bunch. There's Node, there's PHP, there's Java, and there's going to be more over time. So we're really focused on .NET. I think, you know, there's a good investment across all the languages. Perhaps we invest the most in .NET, which shouldn't surprise you too much. And the really cool thing is our Visual Studio tools are a free part of that free SDK, right? So you get a number of things in the SDK. You get emulators, you get libraries to build your project, and you get the Visual Studio tools. And really what our focus is it's on the ability to write, configure, debug, and go through that life cycle using our tools. A few things I want to call out. In the past, we've only had tools for Visual Studio 2010 SP1. As of last Thursday, with the new SDK release, we actually added Visual Studio 2012 support for the RC. So really cool thing. I know a number of you have been asking us about that for a while, and we're pretty actually proud of the fact that the day that Azure had a big release, we sim-shipped a set of Visual Studio tools to work with that new release. And it was only a week after the RC itself came out. A couple other things I want to point out, and this surprises some folks. Oh, actually, I have a typo. I really apologize about that. Really important thing is that there's two versions of the .NET framework you can target. That's .NET 3.5 and .NET 4.0. All right, so when you're in Visual Studio, you're going to need to pick either of those target frameworks in the new project dialog, and that's where you're going to see cloud services. We don't yet support .NET Framework 4.5. 4.5 hasn't shipped yet. It's actually not in production. And you know, we'll make that available as soon as we possibly can. But right now, these are the two that we should look at. A few other things. You have a range of options from the free Visual Studio Express SKUs for web all the way up to the professional, premium, and ultimate SKUs. So you have a breadth of options. It works in all those cases. And if you have ALM features in a particular edition of Visual Studio, chances are those features also work for Azure and for cloud, because we've made really sure that anything you can do for on-premise web development with ALM, you can also do for cloud. And that actually is something that we've been working on over the last year, and I really think we've gotten most all the way there. All right, and so then, as I'll show you, the main there's a few acquisition ways. Like, there's the start page. There's actually a placeholder template in Visual Studio that says get the Azure SDK. And then the really easy one to remember, it's just windowsazure.com, and you go to the .NET Developer Center. There's a big blue button. That's where you get the tools. And it's really cool. We have this web PI or web platform installer. It'll bring down absolutely everything you need to configure IIS, to get the SDK on the machine, and get the emulator, and off you go. So far, so good. Any questions? All right. I won't read this to you, but for your notes and your slides, I wanted you to see, here's all the things we've done over the last year. We've actually released about 5 times over the last year and a half. That's a lot of shipping. A little bit different than the Visual Studio release cadence that I'm used to over the last decade. But and as you can see, there's a number of things that we did just to improve the tooling and to improve the lifecycle, right? So from platform features like working with a VM role or remote desktop to things that just help your productivity, like, hey, if I have multiple environments, I need to have multiple config files. We actually have that feature built in where you can target each environment just by picking a different config file. And then all the way through to things that I think really turned the dial on productivity, like a simplified publish, and we're going to spend time on that. And then to what we did over the last week, and you saw it probably in Scott's keynote, where there's things like the caching preview, virtual machines, a whole bunch of networking improvements that make it easy to secure the different roles on your custom network. We've got a lot of great stuff there. So that said, I promised you I wasn't going to kill you with PowerPoint, so let's switch gears. And I'm on computer 2. All right, so I'm looking at here. This is the new management portal. And for those of you who've already worked with Windows Azure, you know that windows.azure.com is the way that you get in today to the current portal, which is like a really, really big, deep tree. And this new portal, which is super lightweight, based on HTML, you go to manage.windowsazure.com, and you're going to speed dial right into this new portal. And then you can opt in to the new features like the new portal, virtual machines, websites, and then also the cloud services. Right? And as you can see here, I actually have two subscriptions that I co-admin or that I can administer. The main subscription that I work with is this Azure one, but I also work with a colleague. He and I do some team development together, and I can see his subscription as well. One thing that we're seeing that's actually really common is that developers are having multiple subscriptions, and that, you know, whether that's multiple offers you're working with, or perhaps you're a consultant, and you're working with different tenants. And I just want to be clear that our tools and our portal work really well with, you know, one-to-many subscriptions, and that's something that we thought was important we built in. And then, you know, quickly in this view, I can see how many deployments I have, right? And I have a set of production deployments, I have a set of staging deployments, and I can see which ones are running, and I can see what the health is at any time. So being the Visual Studio guy, I got to go to Visual Studio. And the main entry points, just to be aware of, there's actually kind of two. In the projects, we have a cloud project. And this is kind of a logical project type that lets you add several projects, one for each tier of the application that you want. So let's say I could have an MVC4 front end. I could have two worker role back ends to handle different functions of the application, and very quickly scaffold and build out all the tiers of the app that I need. And at any point, I can add a role and just continue wiring up additional projects. Another thing I can do is actually just create an ordinary web application. And actually, I think this is really common, right? For a lot of us who do web development today, this is what we're used to doing. And for any web application that I create, at a later time, I can Azureify it, or I can add that cloud service project. And that'll allow me to basically package up and deploy my application to Azure. It'll also let me model my application really well so that I can specify how many instances I want, how much hardware I want, all that kind of good stuff. So just for a little bit more fun, I have an existing web application that I actually pretty much just pulled off of www.asp.net, and I augmented it just a little bit to make it fun for the demo today. It's the photo gallery. I don't know, who's seen the photo gallery? Okay, so it's kind of familiar. All right. And this is just a standard MVC4 application, right? We're dealing with photos, so I have a controller that's all about, you know, displaying a gallery of applications. And I have a couple sneaky things in here. Don't worry about that yet. There's actually a reason for it. It's not just bad program manager programming. I also have actually data coming from a mock. I have some JSON that represents the data, the metadata from my photos, sitting in a mock file. And actually, I want to have a local mock of my data, and then I'm going to show you how, in a couple steps, we're actually going to connect to real databases sitting in Azure, and we're going to, you know, on the fly, rewrite the application and build it out the real way. So that'll make it a little bit more fun. Okay, so this is our web application, pretty standard, right? Not super complicated. But to Azureify it, what I wanted to show you is I can right-click on any web application project, and I can say, add Windows Azure Cloud Service. And what we'll do is we'll create that Azure packaging and deployment project. Okay? And think of this, again, as a packaging deployment project. I can see all the roles that I'm going to package up. So right now, I just have that front-end photo gallery role. It's already wired up. I can also see that my photo gallery itself has been modified just slightly with a few safe things. For example, we've added all the Windows Azure references that you're going to need. Like if you want to work with the service runtime, which helps you kind of work with the load balance behavior, we give you diagnostics, we give you configuration, and we give you access to storage, right? So, you know, basically take any project, we'll do this safe and easy thing, and you're one step closer to getting it running on Azure. And then in reality, I think the challenges that come up are just making sure that your current application works really well in a stateless environment, right? So you want to avoid writing to the file system. You probably want to avoid doing admin things with a registry, and you want to make sure that it really scales well in a stateless environment. And that's where using the F5 and test cycle in Visual Studio is going to fit in, right? So I don't want to claim that any, you know, complex web application can be converted to Azure and will just work, but it's really a good starting point, and it takes the steps away that you would have to do no matter what. Right. And then let's just look at the anatomy a little bit more. of our Azure project. So like I mentioned, you know, traditionally a cloud service, it's N-tier or multi-tier. So if I want to add more tiers, I can just right-click, add a new worker role project. And I can see a few different templates here. And let's call this photo worker, right? And a logical thing I'd want to do is I want to have the front end queuing up work saying, hey, you know, my end users are adding pictures and photos to the site. And I want to have the back-end worker role doing really cool back-end processing. Like I want to build collages. And I want to do face recognition using face recognition APIs. And I want to have the right compression so that no matter what form factor or media device the end user has, I'm going to serve up the right kind of images and the right resolution for them. So that really, you know, that's the kind of power that I can have in a true multi-tier cloud service that it wouldn't just normally have in a, you know, a simplistic front-end web. And I think that's where Azure Cloud Services are going to start to differentiate themselves for you. All right. A few other things. At the root of every Azure project, there's the CSDef file. This is basically the model, the definition of all the tiers of your application. And we have one or more config files. And it's really important. I don't think we make a big enough deal about this. You can have as many config files as you want, one for each environment that you're targeting or you know, each situation that you want to model. And this gives you the really easy ability to have one application that can go to all different kinds of environments. Let's say test environments, LKG, production, staging, debugging environments, whatever that is. You could just easily define these, and at deployment time, just pick the right file. Okay? We have a nice design time experience. You actually don't need to worry too much about the XML for starters. So what I can do is I can double-click on any of the roles, and we're going to have a nice design time over these, you know, two kinds of XML files. So if I look at the configuration, you know, the most common thing we'll probably do is we'll set an initial instance count. By default, for development, we just target one instance, or meaning one virtual machine. But in reality, we're probably going to have two or more virtual machines so that I meet my SLA and I guarantee high availability, right? So if on patch Tuesday, you know, Microsoft installs some patches, it can, in sequence, take one instance down at a time, apply the update, and bring it back up, and then go update the next. And for your end users, you're never going to go down. You're never going to be unavailable. And that's, you know, super important. Another thing you can do is you can choose the virtual machine size. The easy way to think about this is just how much hardware you have, right? And if you forget what kind of role size maps to this dropdown here, just click on the link. And we'll have a really simple table come up that just says, oh, yeah, you know, I have about 2 gigabytes of memory. I have this much disk space. Here's how much memory I can use. And then you see kind of a linear relationship of as I go up, I'm getting more dedicated resource, more memory, et cetera. So that's the basic modeling that we can do in our application. And let's hit F5. You know, one of the things we thought about as a principle is we want to leave your app in a working state with every, you know, tool gesture that we do. So even after we Azureified this, you know, we're still in a state where we can immediately hit F5 and we can run. One new thing that we're seeing is we've got this Windows Azure emulator. You know, the emulator needs to be there to simulate the Azure runtime, right? So the runtime is actually provisioning multiple instances. It's managing how traffic gets load balanced. It's actually like a data center, right? So the emulator actually emulates having a data center on your dev box. And then you can see all those instances, and you can see what it feels like for traffic to come in and be brokered to each instance and just make sure that things really work well together, right? So I can see my beautiful photo gallery app. I can zoom in on the koala, cute koala. And then I can go to the emulator, and I can see that I have emulators both for compute, so basically for my cloud service, and I also have an emulator for storage, right? And the really cool thing is I don't need to constantly be connecting to Azure and using up my resources that I'm paying for. I can do a lot of work on my local machine, completely disconnected, emulating that environment. You know, and the philosophy that we think about and we hear a lot is that you try to do as much work as you can locally, using the emulator, right? So your development, F5, unit testing, you know, dev-centric testing. And then there's some point where, you know, the only real testing you can do is actually in the real Azure cloud. So you're going to publish to Azure, and you're going to do that next set of integration tests. And you're going to pay at that point, you know, for what you use in Azure, but you're going to be absolutely certain that the pristine, clean virtual machines up in the cloud and all the assumptions that might be different than your dev machine, you're going to make sure that your app really works well. Does that approach resonate with you guys? That about what you do? Yep. Okay, so you know, we'll minimize some costs, and we think the emulator will help you with that, but we're still recommending you do a final test in the cloud. It's kind of like, you know, before you package up your application and put it on a CD, you're going to hit F5 a few times, right? You're going to really try it out. And same thing, we expect you're going to publish and try things out before you deliver it into production. Okay, so let's do a couple more cool things here. This photo gallery, like I said, it's doing some wimpy things, like it's loading data from a local database file. Wouldn't it be cool to actually use a real database? So what I have here, this is pretty unorthodox, I think, for a Microsoft person, but I've installed MongoDB, right, which is a NoSQL-style database. It's super lightweight. It's schemaless. And for my collection of photos, it's a really lightweight way to kind of represent and store that. So I want that metadata coming from MongoDB. And then I actually want the photos to be actually coming from blob storage. So I'm going to save metadata with URLs pointing to blobs sitting in blob storage. So let's go ahead and kind of build this out a little bit. So when I want to customize the behavior of fetching my photo models from the database, where I want to go is to this photo controller. And let's add a little bit of code. All right. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add some import statements. And I'm going to add a NuGet package. I don't know if you guys have used NuGet. I think it's really cool. But it's a way just it's a add reference on steroids, where you can get references to packages that have been verified live on the internet. So we'll add a NuGet package. I can see the NuGet packages that I've already installed. And actually, the Azure references, for the most part, are now NuGet packages. And the benefit you get there is that the NuGet packages will give you update notifications, right? So if we update, let's say, storage, you're going to get a notification in your project, and you can opt in to pull down that update. So it's just going to help you really stay up to date. You can see that update feature's there. But back to Mongo, actually, what I want to do is let's search for a Mongo NuGet package. And I can see that TenGen has the official one. So we'll grab this. Basically, this just gives me the nice client libraries, the nice convenience layer, where I can make my RESTful calls to a MongoDB database, and I can work with Link and kind of all the language features that we expect. All right. So now I don't see any more squigglies. And now I can get rid of this really lame code. So let's add some MongoDB actions. And just for a second, let's make it full screen. There we go. So the lifeblood of this code is to query data. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a connection. I'm going to pick the test database, which actually is the default MongoDB database. The collection, which is like a table that I'm going to work with, is photos. And you can see that I'm going to use a generic collection of photos. And photo is the actual model that I want to deserialize into. So this is a lot like, you know, working with entities and ORM. And then I'm going to do a link-style query to deserialize and fill up those photos. And basically, I'm going to return identical JSON that you saw in that file. So this is going to be an API-compatible return result coming back from MongoDB database that could be on my local machine or it could be anywhere on the internet. And then I also have another helper function, which just takes that file that you saw on disk. It serializes it, and it pushes it into the database. All right, so these two actions are what I need. But you can see that I have a squiggly on connection. And this lets me kind of take a look at a cool new feature. So if I import the Windows Azure namespace, There's a really handy new convenience function in here. So we can say private string connection equals cloud config manager. And this is cloud configuration manager is a brand new thing, only in the 1.7 release. Dot get setting, and then the key. And this API, just simple one line of code, does a lot of work that a lot of us have to figure out and write ourselves. So basically, by default, we're going to check and see if the Windows Azure runtime environment is present. And if it is, we're going to look for that key, and we're going to load that key. Right? So in that csconfig file, if that guy's there, we're going to pull that value out. Now, the nice thing is sometimes the role environment isn't there. Let's say we're running the same web application on-premise or on a different kind of a device. This code won't fail. What it's going to do instead is it's going to fall back and read from web config or the app config. And so the nice thing is you can write your web applications one way. You and other developers just use this line of code, and everywhere you are working with connection strings and resources, you're going to be extra sure that it's always going to work and it's always going to have that right callback, fallback behavior. Pretty cool? Should do more stuff like that? All right. And then the nice thing is this works in conjunction with the tooling that we have in Visual Studio. So I can go to my photo gallery, role, and we have a settings tab. And this is basically where you define and manage the settings for your cloud service. In all of your roles have this ability to define settings. So I can define a key name connection. And then I can type in, if I can type it in, the actual value. So here, Mongo's connection strings are really simple. It's just MongoDB colon and then the DNS name of the server. And I can optionally have a port. And I can, in reality, actually, I should have a private network and make sure that I'm calling in the right port in the network. But we don't want to make this too complicated just to get going. All right, and I think I've defined everything. Oh, but one other thing I want to call out is right now, this setting is defined in all configurations. By default, we have two. We have the local config for debugging. We have the remote cloud config for the cloud. I can define as many of these as I want, and I can have different connection string values, and we'll automatically write to the appropriate file. And we'll come back to that. I have a part of the demo where I'll show that. Let's hit F5 and try it out, right? So now we've, just to summarize, we've written a function that queries MongoDB. There should be data in there. And I'm going to wire that data eventually back into my app, and I'm going to use that as my model. Okay? So we're still doing the cheat right now, right? We're still loading from the local file system. I think this is the advertisement to my boss that it's time for a new laptop. Let's see. All right. And right here, here's the MVC web API, or the controller function, where I can query data. That's making a call into my MongoDB database, and it's pulling JSON back as a response. So I can tell everything's working really nice with just a few more lines of code. All right, and so what I want to do now that I have this data coming back is I'm going to plumb that back in to actually, the sleep's not going to help. there's a reason for it, trust me. So I'm going to say this.content, and into the content, I'm going to pass the call to the MongoDB function. And that's going to be used as the content of the view in MVC. So F5 again. You can really keep me honest here. We can actually watch the trace happening on MongoDB. Well, the build failed. Oh, thanks. Thank you, sir. No return. Got a little carried away. OK, Keep our trace window up here. We can see that the cursor is getting summoned up. I'm probably sleeping. I think I'm going to move that part of the demo around so you don't have to watch it sleep next time. But we can see, actually, honest to goodness, now we're loading. The controller is actually loading from MongoDB, and we're good to go. All right, so that kind of speaks to the local machine development that we're doing. Again, you know, building our front end, working with a data tier. But I need to get this stuff up in Azure. How am I going to do that? Well, you know, today, actually until last Thursday, it was pretty hard to get a totally custom workload like MongoDB or your custom, you know, app server code or whatever you have up into Azure. But now we have this new feature called, you know, Windows Azure Virtual Machines, where I can completely customize an operating system and have whatever I want. Let's say my custom database, my legacy code, whatever I want, I can put that up in Azure. I don't even have to rewrite it. It just works as is. So what we want to do then, let's make use of that. I'm going to open Server Explorer. And we have a number of tools in Server Explorer that let you see into your subscription, reach in, get some data back, and then work with that in your programming. So I'll go to my Windows Azure Virtual Machines, and automatically we're going to enumerate what's in your account. Takes just a few moments. And I can see that I have this data virtual machine already defined, and I get the most interesting data I need. Like, I get the role status, I get the DNS name, and I'm going to use that for my connection string, so I'm just going to copy that. Subscription ID and a bunch of things like that. I also can drill in, and I can see the different endpoints that I've defined. So at a glance, because I've named them well, I can see that I have MongoDB listening on 2717, and I have RDP set up so that at any point I can RDP in and manage the operating system. Now again, I did this for the ease of the demo. What I should really do right after this, go into the portal, define a VNet, and make sure that only the roles, only my, you know, cloud service and my virtual machine are on the same VNet, and that's the only way they can communicate. I don't want to have my database live on the internet for anyone else to hit. So just to let you know, that's something that I would actually do. All right, and so now that I've got that value, what I can do, let's come back into Solution Explorer. We'll go back into our photo gallery. And I'm going to pick the cloud configuration. And I'm going to change my connection string to point to that actual Azure VM sitting in the cloud. And as long as I have network connectivity to it, that guy is going to respond. Okay? And the other thing is, you saw I made use of the multi-configs. So now I've made a change that only lives in my Azure environment config. And it hasn't changed my local config that I'm using for debugging. So you can see, you can go between dev, test, staging, production really easily using this. And a little tip and trick, if you want to force your development environment to pick a non-local config, you can actually do that. So if I get the project properties of my Azure project, there's a bunch of little tuning tweaks in here. I can pick the tools version, but if I scroll down to development, I can see that the service config by default used for running and debugging is the local. I can override that right now, pick cloud, and hit F5. Now what we shouldn't see connection trace coming at this minute, 10:55, from my local, because it's actually going to reach out and grab the Azure data. All right, sweet. So now we're actually getting the data from a VM sitting in Azure running MongoDB. And, you know, that was kind of opaque. It wasn't really clear maybe what was happening at that step. So what we've done in Visual Studio is we've made it easier to manage and diagnose and see what's going on in all the compute tiers, including virtual machines. So if I can just right-click, and now I have a command to connect using Remote Desktop. And the really cool thing is it's just one less thing you have to leave Visual Studio for. You can do all these tasks right inside of VS. And this command works on both the virtual machines and the web and worker roles in the compute node. So that's a brand new thing we did. We can see that the RDP connection's already filled out. I just need to use the administrator password that we installed for RDP. This is really cool. So we're going to remote desktop into some container somewhere sitting in the West US. And you can see that on this virtual machine in Azure, I have the same thing. I have that command line MongoDB tool, and I can actually see the request that my photo gallery just made. So that gives you the idea of like whether you're troubleshooting or just monitoring and tracing, you have control and you have access to that as a developer from Visual Studio. Pretty cool? All right. So now what we've done, we've moved the data tier into Azure. Let's move the rest of the compute and the web worker roles also into Azure. So we can tell the Server Explorer to get out of the way now. We'll go Solution Explorer. And we'll take this Azure project, and we're going to publish. This is something we've drastically simplified. Now all you need to do is choose your subscription. If you've never loaded a subscription in Visual Studio, you can just sign in to download a file. And this file is just a little XML file. I think I have it on disk in my downloads folder. No, it's on my demos folder. Here it is. It's a published settings file. This file gives Visual Studio and the management APIs absolutely everything it needs to work with your subscription. So we know the subscription name, the subscription ID, and then the Base64 encoded certificate to manage your subscription. Just to know, this file basically is the keys to get into your Azure subscription. So you want to keep this file in a secure place, or you want to just delete the file immediately. But it's there for your convenience so that you don't need to create your own certificates, make sure it's on your local machine, make sure it's on the remote machine, make sure it's on every team member's machine. You just have this simple XML file. This is the unit of sharing that you can have in your team. It's super simple. Just be careful with it, put it in a safe place. You know, and coming back to Visual Studio, I can just import that file, and then it gets picked up by Visual Studio, and then each of the subscriptions that I administer will show up here. And incidentally, when I was in the Server Explorer, that same subscription, the same credentials, is what we use to see into your account. So once you install the subscription anywhere, all features of Visual Studio will share that information and will be able to make use of it. So you don't have to add account settings and certificates and all that junk all the time. All right. Now we'll move forward. You know, really simple set of decisions, and we try to make smart defaults everywhere. You can choose the cloud service container that you want to use. If you actually haven't created one, you can just go create one on the fly. So let's just call this TechEd Photo Gallery. You know, and this needs to be unique DNS name on the internet, so hopefully nobody squatted this before coming into the meeting. Let's pick East US as a data center. One thing I'm going to note here, for those of you who've worked with Azure before, we don't do the anywhere US or anywhere Europe data centers anymore. That was supposed to be there for convenience so that we automatically kind of push your deployment wherever we can, and you don't have to worry about it. But what we've learned from experience is that leads to inadvertent bugs and issues where you have different tiers of your application that actually live in different data centers. And then you're going to see latency, and you're going to see possibly even your costs go higher because there's ingress and egress of data crossing the data centers. So to make it safer for you guys, we've actually eliminated those anywhere data centers. And it's better just to pick an explicit data center and, you know, be careful about making sure all tiers of your app are in the same data center or the same affinity group. All right. So we'll go ahead and we'll provision this. You know, Visual Studio, boom, right away, we'll do this. It's not something I need to go to the portal or use PowerShell. I can just do it right here. Then I can pick the environment, production or staging. If I use multiple solution configurations and I use those like web config transforms, or maybe you've seen Slow Cheetah, this option right here will drive the web config transform that you're using. Also, we define those cloud and local cloud configs. You pick the one that you want to use here, right? And if I could have more, I could have one for testing, LKG, all that kind of stuff. And then for convenience, we have things like enabling remote desktop. So I can install a remote desktop into the remote role, give it a username or password, and that's all I have to do. In the past, you actually had to, again, create certificates, upload them, do a whole bunch of management tasks, but you don't have to do that anymore. All right. And another cool thing is you can actually enable web deploy or MS deploy. And once your application is provisioned and up and running, you can have a web deploy endpoint that lets you make simple excopiable changes right from your actual web project. So you don't have to do the full redeployment to see those changes up in Azure. Again, I'll give you a warning on this one. It's really good for development. It's not meant for patching production. It only works with single instances. And you can't guarantee that a change you make like that to the file system is going to survive, because any healing event, any Microsoft servicing event can cause the role to reboot and recycle, and that data will be gone. So again, this is just good for that quick try change out. It takes a few seconds instead of a few minutes. And then there's advanced options, which are really cool. Like I can do things like enable IntelliTrace. Right? And that way I have really good eventing, really good instrumentation information if something goes wrong. And you can see the options we have here. And this is actually just like web IntelliTrace that you're used to today. We're going to stand it up in the cloud for you. And I did a lot of talking, but I actually didn't have to do a lot of thinking. I just pick up a bunch of options. Off I go. I get a nice published summary to see what I'm going to do. And hit publish. And now we're going to build all tiers of your application. We're going to create the setup package, which in Azure terms is the CSPAC or CSPKG file. We're going to pick the right config file, and then we're going to use our service management APIs to actually upload and publish this to Azure to exactly the environment that you said. And all that work, Visual Studio does the heavy lifting for you. I have another talk, and it's in the slide notes, but you can actually automate exactly what I'm doing here using the Visual Studio UI. You can automate that in PowerShell, MS Build, and also using TFS Team Build. So don't feel like it's only easy in Visual Studio. It's actually also easy to automate. And another nice thing is we kind of recognize that a lot of these processes have latency, right? When you're uploading or provisioning VMs, it actually takes time. So we created this Windows Azure Activity Log, which allows background work to happen. You can just kind of sit there and watch the trace logs and watch things hum along. But you can keep working on your development, and you don't have to have that blocking operation and wait for that to complete. And actually, in this case, on average, a deployment takes between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on whether it's an in-place upgrade or a full deployment. So you don't want to wait around for that. All right, so now that we're publishing, that's a good time, I think, to take a break, go back to slides, catch up on where we are. Right. So, a few tips that I have for you here. Just make sure you kind of recognize the differences between the emulator and being in real Azure. Actually, I didn't make a big deal out of it, but we are in this version now running on top of IIS Express by default. Super lightweight. I didn't have to install or configure the full IIS server. It was just up and running right away. You can also use IIS server if you want that absolute full fidelity testing with Azure. So you can pick either one. It's just a project property. Like we talked about, emulator's ideal for that unit testing. Azure's really ideal for the integration testing. We touched on multiple configs. We touched on config transforms, and we use the Cloud Config Manager. Just for your notes to take home, here's that line of code that we called to get the config setting. And here are the two places you could look it up from either Cloud Config or from Web Config or App Config. These slides will be updated, I think, within 24 hours. They'll be on the TechEd site. You can take them home. A few other things we talked about, like it's really great to make use of that published settings file. Just remember it's a secure asset. Put it somewhere safe or delete it. Pick the right cloud service config for the right target environment. That's the easy way to manage all those different test and staging environments that you have. We didn't really get into it, but actually the published dialogs settings themselves can be saved into a profile, and that happens automatically, and it's automatically checked in. So it's actually an MS build file, and that MS build file can be used actually by TFS team build as well. It's pretty slick. We saw the activity log. We were really careful in the tooling to make sure that we fail fast and that there's really good validation. So just look at the activity log. Any failure that you hit, chances are there's really actionable data in that activity log, and you can use that for supportability. And then, you know, when you're doing your publish, and it's easy for me to forget too, just remember to install the right agents, because otherwise those agents won't be running on your Azure VM, and you're actually going to have to redeploy to install those agents on your machine. Today's architecture for Azure is, you know, all customizations for the operating system need to be packaged up with your app and that CS pack, and they all need to be pushed together. And if you need to customize the OS again, you're going to need to redeploy. Okay. And then, so switching gears a little bit, I promised that we'd get it, you know, a little deeper dive into diagnostics and what are the most common tools that we can use for everyday diagnostics. I want to highlight three. There's remote desktop. You saw me use it for the IaaS VM. But really, that just lets me interact with the live operating system and see exactly what's going on, whether that's looking at the IaaS logs, whether that's looking at the requests coming in. You know, if I'm looking at the actual file system, I can inspect what's going on and see. And we just enable that simply in the project or as a part of the publish process. Then there's Windows Azure Diagnostics. I'd say that's the next level of defense that you can have. It's free to use, other than, you know, it's more data that's being kind of consumed and pulled in your roles. But this is a place where you can do logging on your system with like the IaaS log, the failed request log, all that kind of stuff. You can also write your own custom application traces, and Windows Azure Diagnostics will pipe those traces to Azure Storage so that you can inspect them at a later time. And I have more detailed information for you on that. And then the third thing, if you have Visual Studio Ultimate, you have IntelliTrace, which is really cool. You know, given that today you can't just walk up to your Azure instance, stop all traffic, and attach your debugger, right? That's not cool. You can't just do that. But what you can do with IntelliTrace, you can have IntelliTrace collecting data on whatever interval you want, and then if there are problems, or even if there aren't problems, you're capturing that information. You can download it, and then just like a DVR, you know, TiVo, that kind of a thing, I can play back the exact environment, the exact situation that was happening in the live instance, and I can look at that in my local debugger, and I can get insight into any problems or behaviors that are surprising me in Azure. So it's, you know, IntelliTrace is helpful on-premise. It's invaluable in the cloud. Really, really helpful. For Windows Azure Diagnostics, you know, I admit it's not the easiest area of our platform and tooling. So I just want to give you a cheat sheet here. We probably won't spend too much time developing it. But in Visual Studio, what we do automatically for you is we'll install the diagnostics agent, and we'll set up a storage account and a collection for you to collect the default data for storage. And so at publish time, we'll actually even use your publish storage account to automatically set that into your connection string and stamp that into your config file. If you want to use a different storage account anywhere, you just can go change that connection string. It's in your project. You have complete control over it. We also add the diagnostics monitor listener to web config so that your actual ASP.NET standard tracing can use the Windows Azure Diagnostics trace and pipe, you know, trace statements right into it. And then some things that you still need to do, you need to control the actual configuration of the Windows Azure Diagnostics and basically how verbose data that you want to collect and on what interval and that kind of stuff. So the code, the basic code to kind of get started is to create that diagnostics config. And then it's imperative that in your onStart method for your role that you call diagnosticsMonitor.start, passing in the connection string. With those two lines of code, you will actually be pushing data by default. And then there's a bunch of samples that we have as far as, like, here's how I set up particular perf counters, particular counters. I capture particular logs, whether that's IIS or failed requests. And you get a sense of what those are in that markup. And then, so, you know, that covers monitoring the system. If you want to diagnose your application, you just need to write these one-liners like trace.WriteLine, you know, trace information, capturing exceptions, and pushing the trace error. And we're just going to use the built-in ASP.NET tracing feature and actually funnel that through to Windows Azure Diagnostics. And then the cool thing is that data just is actually getting captured in either blob storage or table storage. So your failed request logs and your IIS logs, because they're files, they automatically go to blob storage. All other data, including the app traces, they're all going to go to table storage. And they're going to be in well-named containers, starting with WAD for Windows Azure Diagnostics. And that's where that data is going to go. And then I think an opportunity that we have in Visual Studio is to make that data easier to read. Today, it's going to look like a really big data grid with an awful lot of information in it. Here's actually a preview here. And you can use OData-like syntax to supply a filter. Like I'm showing here, hey, if I want to pull on the timestamp of June 6th, you know, I can type in this expression. I'm going to see everything absolutely that happened at that timestamp, and I get some insight into what was going on. Hey, was that a healing event, a Windows update? Was some other process going haywire at that point? You know, what's really going on here? Am I having failed requests? I can get those insights using this tool. And for everything that I showed here and more, there's a really good how-to guide on WindowsAzure.com. It's in the slides. Any questions on that before I get into the demo for it? I know it's a big group. All right. So we'll switch over. We'll do a bit of a Julia Childs here because my application's still deploying and the VMs are still starting. Let's make sure I have the right one. Context dev. Okay, this is the one I want. Okay, so let's take a first look kind of in the troubleshooting arena. What can I do if I hit an error? So the first thing we're going to do is see a common error that happens in Azure, which actually looks like a failure that happens when your application starts or when your first request is made. So I should hopefully have deployed a demo or a sample that actually has an error. So we can experience this live, and then we're going to troubleshoot it live. Always a little scary to do this when you only have an hour. OK, good. So we want to see an error. So our application failed. This is an application we just deployed to Azure. We don't have a debugger at our disposal. What are we going to do? Right? And so one thing we can do is we can look at the Windows Azure Diagnostics, assuming we'd written the kinds of traces that we need using the code and the slides that I showed you earlier. But an even easier thing I can do, I can come back into Visual Studio, and because I've enabled IntelliTrace on my role, I can see in Server Explorer, hey, IntelliTrace or the profiling agent are enabled. So I can go to my photo gallery. I can isolate a particular instance or a particular VM. And I can collect the IntelliTrace logs. And so we're working with the IntelliTrace agent that's up in Azure. It's been doing a whole bunch of data collection. Right now, it's doing a push into Azure storage. We're going to download that data to your local machine. And we're going to start a debugging session kind of in DVR mode right back on our local development system. And this won't impact our live site or our staging site up in Azure. Yes, sir. That's a great question. How would I know which instance to do that? Right now, it's kind of trial and error, honestly. You can collect the IntelliTrace logs for all instances, but you do have to look at each one. I think a great thing that we could do is have better alerting of which instance had a problem so that you don't have to have that guesswork. Yeah, that's a great question. That's something that we should do a better job on. Yes?
How big do those logs get? You did one operation there.
Yep.
And, hundreds of people have been hitting your site.
Yep.
Can you control how far back? How do you manage?
You can. IntelliTrace, and I didn't get into it, but there was the IntelliTrace settings, and there's a whole number of dials from the verbosity level. Like, you could do just events, or you could do events and, deeper information, and you can control the interval. And you can control the time span. So yes, you can absolutely control that.
If you do this, it's going to be just whatever that time span you reconfigured, that's what you're going to pull.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely right. And it's kind of a black belt thing, but you can actually remotely configure the IntelliTrace config at any time. So you could keep it on a really low monitoring log level, and then you can crank it up when you have a problem. We don't do that automatically. That's something we'd like to do in the future also. Long story short, so I've actually pulled the IntelliTrace summary, and let's see if we have any exceptions. Actually, there's a number of exceptions, some coming from the runtime itself, and some that look like they're coming from my app. And the very first error that's getting reported back is it couldn't find the site's root, so this is the IIS root, appdataphotos.json. And come to think of it, that's interesting. That's a local file that I have in my project. And actually, this will happen, honest to goodness, if you download the sample today, you're going to hit this error. So it's definitely kind of a real-world thing. But I don't have any code other than what you saw before where I'm going to do a file load from this file, and it's saying that file's not found. That's kind of weird. Why is that? Kind of long story short, looking at the properties, it turns out that the build action is set to none, which actually means it's not getting built as a part of my app. That file in the folder actually won't be there at all, right? Some of you are nodding your head because you probably hit this. So we can just do something like set this to content. Now it's embedded content that ships with my app, and I'm not going to see that load failure anymore. And then if I get lucky today, which I have so many projects, I might not, but if I double click on the exception, we're actually going to put Visual Studio with IntelliTrace into debug mode, and we're going to see every event that happened during that startup sequence, including the exceptions. So I can see every exception coming up. Yep. It's only for Visual Studio Ultimate today. That's right. So I can see kind of like a full trace of what's happening, and I can actually zoom in exactly to the line of code that's having a problem, and I can study the exception if that helps me environmentally or not. Okay. So that gives you an idea of one tool that you can use. You can also use the Windows Azure Diagnostics, and you can capture request failures and failures at that level also. Another kind of common problem that we have, given that cloud services need to be built to scale, they need to be available all the time, you want them to be fast. We have the Visual Studio Profiler that can also help you identify those performance issues and pull it down. So I have another instance of Visual Studio. Sorry, not to make you dizzy. But we actually, kind of by design today, you can only have the IntelliTrace data collector or the IntelliTrace agent installed at a time, only one at a time. They're mutually exclusive, and it's unfortunate. It's something we want to change, but I actually needed a different deployment to have the profiling enabled. So just FYI if you ever hit that. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at our compute instances in this IDE. And I can see another cloud service with the same app deployed to it, and this one has profiling enabled. And for any of my roles and any of my instances, I can get a profiling report. So let's pull it for our front end. And same trick, we're going to push it into blob storage and then pull it down to your local machine. And that failed. I don't know why that failed. I just downloaded it beforehand. It's probably not a project, it's a file. Okay, and if you're familiar with the there we go. I was worried that the profiler went out partying last night. Okay, it didn't. So now what I can see is I can zoom into the call tree and look at the call paths. And this is fictitious, right, because I don't have real load on the site. But in reality, I'd have real load, and I'd see much higher counters going on. And I could look at the call tree and go through the exercise of identifying the hot paths. So I can hit this little hot path, hot icon, and I can see the tiers where I'm having some performance issues, and I can continue to go into the hot path, and I can say, hey, you know, the more offensive lines of code, the places where I'm spending more time in the profile are these. And remember that goofy thread statement I put in, thread sleep? That's what we're catching right now. We're actually seeing where I'm artificially spending too much time. I know one of these days I'm going to have a demo that's actually better with a real-life performance issue, but in reality, it might be something like a high-latency connection to a database, a really intense calculation that you're doing, something just inefficient in your algorithm. You're going to be able to spot that in the hot path, and then you can go back to the actual source code, and you can actually go ahead and make your changes and optimize it as you need to. So you can always do local profiling, but this also helps when you're running in the real environment with real load to see where those hot paths actually end up when you have real data instead of sample mock data. All right. So just to summarize, so the profiler captures the code execution timing. You use the hot paths to isolate the problem spots in your code. And one last topic that we have is just continuous delivery. And like I mentioned before, you can do a lot of these scenarios using the Visual Studio tooling, which is really easy. But in a mature process, chances are we're going to automate absolutely everything. So you can use the new continuous delivery functionality that we've delivered in the Team Foundation service. That's the hosted TFS in the cloud. That automatically can wire up your Azure Cloud Services to hosted TFS. You can also do it on-premise. That's a little bit more involved. I did a talk on that on Tuesday. I have a pointer to the white paper on how to do it. But that involves using some MS Build and PowerShell in conjunction with your on-premise TFS, and you can set up the continuous delivery there as well. I think we have time. Why don't we see if we can sneak in a demo of that? All right, so we'll do we'll log into tfspreview.com. And actually, I've already done the trial myself and provisioned this team site. What we'll do is we'll create a new team project just for today. TechEd vs Azure. We can pick the process template and go ahead and provision it. While that's happening, I'm going to go back to Azure. And what we can do is we can pick a container, a cloud service container. We can open it up. And there's actually kind of a wizard that will let us... Oh, that's already connected to TFS. Let's do it again. What we can do is we can connect the services up so that basically your TFS service account is authorized to talk to your Windows Azure account. It actually uses OAuth to allow that communication. Once you've done that, every check-in that you do in Visual Studio into the depot will translate to an actual build, your test running, and assuming that your quality gates pass, it's going to do a live push to Azure into this container and into the slot. So it's really cool. Every check-in or on a rolling build, like a nightly basis, you can make sure that every day, every minute, your end users are getting the best in the updates that you've made to your Azure Cloud service. It really just keeps that fluid process going. All right, so let's set up TFS publishing. It's going to ask me for the URL to my TFS site, and we're going to authorize it. And this is kind of the OAuth handshake, where I'm going to grant build permissions from one service to the other. I'm going to accept that. And so you don't need to move certificates around either in this case. Right? And then we're going to enumerate all the team projects. And we have this one that we just provisioned, TechEd VS Azure. All right, and it's already set up. Coming back to Visual Studio, we're going to do a couple things. We're going to check in the project into source code control. You can do this in any sequence. In reality, you probably would have checked in already, and now you're just setting up the automated build and delivery. But it doesn't really matter which order you do it. All right, and so what we're going to do is publish into, what did we just do? There's so many of these now. TechEd VS Azure. Then we're going to add a whole bunch of files to source code control. I think we're pushing the convention center's internet to the limits here. All right, we'll check that in. Just one tip and trick. If you're on VS 2010, there is a bug where your NuGet packages, jQuery, et cetera, don't get checked in by default. So look for a peer folder called packages. Explicitly add that packages folder to source code control, and then you'll have everything you need checked in. If you're seeing build errors when someone does an enlistment, that's what the issue is. That was fixed in VS 2012. All right. While we're doing this, let's take a look at the Team Explorer. And build scripts in TFS, if you're not totally familiar with it, they're called build definitions. So if I go to my Builds tab, by doing that web wizard, we've automatically created this continuous delivery, CD, build definition. I can see anything in the queue. And it gives me a bunch of smart defaults that I can go customize and override. So for example, I have a number of triggers, whether it's a manual kickoff a build, like build on every check-in, or do a rolling build with a timing. And then we also have this process template. A process template's a fancy word for a XAML workflow. And the XAML workflow really explicitly defines all the things that happen from building to canonicalizing your file system paths to running your test, and then once everything passes there, to actually doing the push to Windows Azure. And you can see that the build definition by default was super smart. It found the solution to build, and I could go pick a different solution if I want to. But basically, I'm ready to go. So the next check-in I do is going to publish to Azure. So if I go back to Solution Explorer, let's go to the Home Controller. I have a sanctioned check-in here. All right. And then what we're going to see in the builds tab, just by following that wizard, automatically builds are going to be queued up, which build my cloud service package and push it to Azure following exactly the same conventions that we would have done in Visual Studio. So just incredibly easy now using the two services to get the CI and CD already wired up. Is that a good thing? We should be doing stuff like that, I think? All right. Thanks. I thought you guys were holding back on me. Come on. All right. So just to summarize, we saw a lot of ways that we're improving the development process for cloud services, and then the additional services like VMs and storage. We did a bit of a deep dive into the everyday tools you have for diagnosis and debugging. And then you can see how this really fits into the overall life cycle. So with that said, just for your reference, there's some other content. I appreciate it if you guys fill out the evals. The fives are for me, the comments are for me, the fives are for my boss. And with that said, thank you so much for being an awesome crowd coming on your last day.